Good morning. Good to see you, Mr. Hargan.
Good to see you as well. May it please the court, my name is David Hargan. I represent Mr. Marshall on the appeal of his conviction. This was a conditional guilty plea, with the only issue whether or not the stop was prolonged such that the evidence should have been suppressed.
Mr. Hargan, I don't want to hijack your argument as it's just beginning, but your brief seems to center largely on Rodriguez.
That's correct.
Rodriguez does not apply in this case, though, does it?
I would argue that the law from Rodriguez does apply.
I thought that the stop in this case was before Rodriguez was decided.
It was.
So isn't Ellis the controlling case at that point in time?
Well, no. If you're talking about, there are two different concepts here. The first question is whether or not the stop was prolonged and whether that would make it so that it was not reasonable to do that investigation at that point. That's one question. I think the question that you're kind of going at is what Ellis was the law, if you will, at the time, and then the Matthews case ultimately said that there was a violation. Keep in mind, Matthews, which, of course, is a panel of this court, and so this panel cannot overturn another panel. I understand that. But Matthews is based on the principle that the Rodriguez applied. Rodriguez says that the stop was unlawful, or the extended stop was unlawful or in violation of the Fourth Amendment, but ultimately the good faith exception applied. That was the question was whether the exclusionary rule should apply under the good faith exception, not whether or not Rodriguez was the controlling precedent. Because here, regardless of when the stop occurred, which of course was before Rodriguez was decided, Rodriguez still applies to this case because it's still pending at the time that it's being decided.
Counsel, to follow up on Judge Atlas' question in terms of the application of Rodriguez, notwithstanding what you just indicated, in terms of whether it applies, we have a situation where what is there to prove the stop is actually prolonged? But isn't the officer still in the car after running the information when the drug dog comes and runs around the car? And there's a Supreme Court case law that indicates that that's in fact not something impermissible by the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I think that that's a very truncated way of looking at the evidence. As a matter of fact, the court made a factual determination that you assume the worst-case scenario. So there are three different times where the stop was prolonged for a purpose unconnected with the traffic stop. Specifically, when the officer Milton spoke to Officer Melton, Melton being the one who...
But how is that any different from the officer checking the pistol or checking any other types of reports that he may do when he's in the car? Isn't that sort of similar? The only difference is he's actually speaking with a live person rather than getting a radio transmission or something across his computer.
Well, it's a huge difference. For one, under that logic, an officer could do anything that he might be able to find by computer by other means. And quite frankly, that could be a situation where you call in any officer that you want and say, what can you tell me about this person that I have in the car? That's clearly unreasonable to do at that point. Secondly, it wasn't just something that might be reported by pistol. This is a conversation, and of course, you know, we're stuck with the record that we have, so we don't know how much of a conversation they had, but we know the topics that they covered. And under Milton's own testimony, the conversation had to do with, I've dealt with this individual before. This individual has a drug record. There's stuff going on in the West End, whatever that means. And he also explained his interactions with the defendant. Now, I would dare say that other than the criminal history, which of course pistol would reveal, the other stuff is beyond that. So, I mean, there are many reasons why this is not something that... this clearly prolonged the stop. And so if your question is, well, but isn't it the same thing that pistol would have found? The answer is no. It was a lot more than that. And secondly, even if he's going to go back and do a pistol search anyway, then why would you need to have a conversation with an officer about something that the computer is going to tell you is legitimate as far as what the information is?
However, under Fourth Amendment law, an officer can choose one way to do things versus another.
As long
as it doesn't affect the ultimate determination.
Well, that's true, but he essentially did it twice then, if that's the case. And I don't think that the law permits that. So you can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again, because that is unnecessarily prolonging the stop. And keep in mind...
But under the law at the time, he was allowed to do that. He was allowed to prolong the stop,
well,
de minimis, but
well,
still...
Well, I beg to differ with that whole analysis, because one, I don't think... Well, under the law, I disagree, number one, that Ellis even applies. I mean, in Matthews as well. I mean, they're very similar.
Well, Matthews seems... I mean, Matthews makes it clear how to interpret Rodriguez based on when Rodriguez was decided, right? And you started this whole conversation with we're bound by Matthews as a panel.
No, you're bound by the decision in Matthews.
Right.
I'm not conceding that Matthews applies. Okay, and the reason why Matthews doesn't apply is a couple of reasons here, and it gets into the de minimis part of it. First of all, under Matthews, there was ultimately a consent. There was a consent to search. And so that essentially ended the inquiry as far as what happened. That's not what happened here. There was no consent to search. And Ellis also... essentially was partly a consent to search. He said, well, just our consent to bring the canine unit is what that was. But the de minimis part is actually even more significant here, because keep in mind, I think it was, and I'll make sure I don't get the two confused, Matthews was talking about tattoos, criminal history, and the call for the canine unit. That's it. So, and it's described as a casual conversation about tattoos. So then we need to determine, what does de minimis mean? If you're saying that if only prolonged it by a few seconds or possibly a minute or so, that's de minimis. I think that there's a lot more in this case.
But there's one counsel that specifically defines that very term in terms of de minimis. It's sort of a case-by-case analysis in terms of the facts are, isn't that fair to say?
Exactly.
So
and I would argue...
We have to look at the facts of this case and how long of a period of time it took between the stop and the time the drug dog showed up, which, according to Burke, varies a little bit, but appears to be... from what Officer Milton says, about 5 minutes is the entirety of this, the time frame from the call of the canine unit to the arrival. 5 to 7 minutes is, I think, the time frame. Would that qualify as de minimis or not?
Well, I mean, first of all, no, it would not be de minimis. That's an extended period, completely unnecessary. It's not
and
like...
What authority do you have to back that up?
Well, you're talking about a case-by-case basis. So you're asking me for authority that's exactly on point. There is no case. I will say in Matthews, though, that this court, a panel of this court, specifically pointed out that a phone call to K-9 may have taken only a second, a few seconds, 30 seconds, or a minute. And they call that de minimis. Okay, fine. How long of a conversation did Milton have with Melton? We know that it was much more than just, hey, this guy's got a record. It was he specifically says his interactions with the defendant, what he knows about the defendant's criminal history, what he knows, and what's going on in the West End, whatever that means. You know, so this isn't just a simple 1 or 2 second or 30 second deviation. These are laying a lot of information here. And that's before the drug dog is called, the canine unit is called in. So there's already the delay. Now, of course, once...
So what period of time is that delay? Is it in the record?
As far as the duration by minutes and seconds, we do not have that. That's correct. But it's much more than just a simple question about, let's say, for instance, in Matthews, are those tattoos prison tattoos? No, they're not. That was the thing in Matthews. Here we have, I've already articulated, I won't say it again, 5 other things. That's just the conversation with Milton. Then he needs to make the call to the K-9 unit. We don't know how long that takes. It's not in the record. I wasn't trial counsel, so those questions maybe should have been asked, but they weren't. But it doesn't matter, because we have the factual findings from the trial court, and we're bound by those unless they're plainly wrong. So the trial court ruled as far as the canine call was made. It was made at some point, and he doesn't say it was made while the officer was walking from Milton's car to his squad car. But keep in mind, he never would have been over at Milton's car if he had not been answering questions or getting the information that was unrelated to the traffic stop. That's the whole point. And it's conducting an investigation into potential drug activity is essentially what we're talking
about. If we take your argument to its logical conclusion, then Matthews actually would apply in terms of looking at the Rodriguez analysis, correct? And then we're back to the de minimis part. So you're saying it's outside of the reason for the traffic stop, which is what Rodriguez talks about. Is that what your argument is in terms of Milton talking to Melvin?
Well, keep in mind, I combine all three events.
No, but I'm asking in terms of what you just said. Is, it sounds like that's what you're indicating in terms of Rodriguez's analysis. Are you indicating that from the time that Milton talks to Melton, that that puts it into a Rodriguez time frame?
Definitely. It prolongs the stop in doing a conduct that's unrelated to the traffic stop, for sure.
Okay.
No doubt.
Then how does the Matthews analysis not apply? Because, in fact, Rodriguez was not applicable at the time of the offense. So really do it through a Matthews analysis, correct? In terms of whether the exclusionary rule would apply.
Okay, but before you get to Matthews, you have to first determine that this is de minimis. My argument is it is not de minimis.
Okay.
It's beyond de minimis. And if that's the case, Matthews doesn't apply, Ellis doesn't apply, it was unnecessarily prolonged under case law that existed prior to Rodriguez. Second, I think Matthews was wrongly decided. And I can say that. You can't do anything about it. But we have additional procedures beyond this one that I'd be happy to.
We're the
pass
through.
And you might see me again on this argument, I hope.
Counsel, I neglected to ask you about rebuttal time. You're about 3.5 minutes. Do you want to save time for rebuttal?
I think that I will at this point. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. And I apologize for that.
Perfectly fine.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald, on behalf of the Commonwealth. Matthews does control the Court's analysis in this case. As the Court has noted, the Rodriguez decision came out about a year prior to the stop in this case. And as this Court noted in Matthews, when we're looking at deterring police, culpable police conduct, the exclusionary rule, rather, as this Court held in Matthews, should not be applied when the police are acting in good faith under then-existing binding law. And that's exactly what we have in this case.
Counsel, what's the timeline here? How much time falls into that de minimis category?
Well, Your Honor...
What do we know?
So we know that the stop occurred between 11:30 and 11:35, and that's at Appendix page 97. We know that Milton called the dog at 11:37 at Appendix 78, and that the dog alerts at 11:44, and that's...
How is that de minimis, though, I think, counsel's point in terms of the time frame that's elapsed? Granted, there's no specific case law, it's case by case, but how do you say that much time is de minimis?
Sure, Your Honor, the timeline I've just gone over is the timeline for the entire stop. So we have an entire stop that's 11 to 15 minutes. And then we have to parse down there to see what part of that was related to the stop and what part of that was either in pursuit.
Well, we know the call to 11:37 and doesn't show up until 45 after, so we at least have a period of time where presumably Milton's in the car and I'm not sure what's going on.
Correct, Your Honor. Well, so from 11:35 or 11:30 to 11:37, when the dog is called, we have Milton talking to the defendant, going to his car, asking for his license, the defendant telling him that his license has been suspended, and that entire interaction happens, and there's a conversation with Officer Milton, and then the radio call while he's walking back on his way to the car. So that entire time frame can't be attributed to activities that were beyond the scope of the traffic stop. The officer during this entire time was diligently investigating the traffic stop. He was speaking with the defendant, and then he did speak with Melton, and the dog is called on the radio while he's walking back to his car. The 5 minutes between when the dog was called and when the dog arrived, Officer Milton was in his vehicle processing the defendant's information, looking at DMV, looking at NCIC, looking at pistol, and those are all activities that the officer is doing in pursuit of his traffic mission. So that five-minute delay between when the dog is called and when the dog arrives isn't attributable to another motivation because the officer takes that time to pursue his traffic mission, which is why the stop in its entirety was so short. Further, the court was looking for authority. The Mason case we cited on our brief, the Fourth Circuit held that a two-minute delay of an 11-minute stop was de minimis, and that is certainly akin to what we have here. That Mason case also collects other cases in a page-long footnote talking about what other courts have held to be de minimis. And while that's certainly not binding on this court, I think it is persuasive when we're talking about a few conversations in the context of a stop that was conducted expeditiously.
Were there any factual findings made by the trial court that were bound by relating to the stop?
Your Honor, the court held that in the worst case scenario, Milton went over to Melton and spoke to him and then came back. And I think that that would be the only, if we're going with the trial court's version of events, there was no timeline there. There was no time stamps in the court's ruling, to the best of my recollection. So we have two brief conversations and a radio call that's made while walking. And these conversations were necessarily brief, as we know, because looking in that entire timeline, we have all of the traffic stop items ongoing while these things are happening. We talk about how long that conversation between Officer Milton and Officer Melton was. We know it was between 2 and 5 minutes, and also in that 2 and 5 minute time frame, or not 2 and 5 minutes, rather, well, between when the stop happened and when the dog was called, the officer approached the car, he talked to the defendant, he got his license, he got his information, he realized he was suspended, he took his ID card, and he talked to Melton. So all of that is happening before the dog is called. So that conversation was necessarily brief, although we don't have a specific timestamp on it. The second was the phone call with the walkie-talkie on the shoulder, or for the record, to be clear, doesn't reflect that it was made from his walkie-talkie on his shoulder. However, he radioed while he was walking back and forth between the car. This is certainly a case where I think in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, we can infer that he is calling from his radio on his person when he made that radio call while walking. And he certainly couldn't have been investigating the traffic stop any further while walking. So even if we were looking at a true Rodriguez analysis, that phone call doesn't make any difference. There's no delay, actually, from that at all. And the final piece of delay that the defendant has lighted on is Officer Robinson's conversation with Milton when the dog arrives before running the car. And the record is clear that Milton stayed in his car throughout that conversation, that he was continuing to do his research, he was continuing to do his investigation. He didn't get out of the car at that time, and in fact, he ended up seeing the dog alert from inside his car because he was still conducting his traffic search mission. And so the officer's arrival, the canine officer's arrival, did not interrupt the traffic search mission in this case. And to the extent that it did, again, we would argue that it's certainly de minimis under this court's case law as it existed at the time of the stop, under Ellis, under the Fourth Circuit case in Mason and Matthews, as has been discussed, involved two conversations, a conversation about the defendant's criminal history, a conversation about the defendant's prison tattoos, and also the canine radio call. Those are materially similar circumstances to what we found here, and this court has found that those delays were de minimis.
Do we know how long the delay was in Ellis?
I do not know off the top of my head, Your Honor.
I'm just asking.
No, I don't recall. However, in Ellis, I believe, as in Rodriguez, we had a situation there where the dog came after the traffic stop was completed. The purpose of the traffic stop had ended, and then the dog arrived on the scene. And of course, as the Supreme Court noted in Rodriguez, we're talking about whether the police's actions measurably extend the stop. So that alone now would not be a reason to take it out of the Fourth Amendment analysis, but certainly at the time of this stop, those small extensions were permitted under the Fourth Amendment. They were considered reasonable, and they were reasonable in this case. I would note briefly, Your Honors, if the court were to just apply the strict Rodriguez analysis, speaking to Officer Melton before going back to his car is part of the traffic stop mission. The court specifically held in Rodriguez that officer safety and the police officer's officer safety concerns spring from the traffic mission. And to the extent that Officer Melton and Officer Milton were conferring regarding the defendant in the car, what he was involved in, what he was capable of, they were in a high crime area of the city, and any conversation they had regarding the defendants.
Was there a conversation mostly about drugs, since the sale of drugs are not necessarily weapons?
Yes, Your Honor.
So how does that factor into the officer safety?
As the court noted in Rodriguez and the Supreme Court in Arizona versus Johnson, the major officer safety concern is not with a regular motorist being upset about a speeding ticket. It's about what other information could come to light during the traffic stops. The police officer knowing that he's dealing with an individual who might be involved in dealing drugs, and certainly this court has recognized the connection between drugs and guns, is a close one. The officer should be aware of all those circumstances while he's exposed and dealing with this traffic stop. And to the extent that conversation furthered the officer's safety purpose, which is closely connected to the officer's traffic mission, even under a true Rodriguez analysis, it wouldn't have been a deviation from the stop. It would have fit within his traffic mission. And I'd be happy to address the remainder of the Rodriguez analysis if the court has questions. The rest of my brief and ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hargett?
Yes, thank you.
A little over 3.5.
Right. And so we're calling the question about those prison tattoos a conversation. That's not a conversation. In Matthews, that's all that happened. In Matthews, all it was a conversation about the criminal history. Conversation or just a question? I mean, that's the difference here. A conversation takes time. A question doesn't really. So that's where de minimis really kind of falls apart here. Because Milton stayed in his car. And I should say Melton with an E. The one who knew about Mr. Marshall, he says. He was sitting across just waiting for something else to happen. So whatever investigative thing that was going on at that time had concluded when he got his license, and all he was going to do is run pistol. So there was a stop. There was a break in his investigation, and he went over because I guess you can assume that Melton called Milton over to his car, and he told him all these things.
Counsel, is it incorrect that from 11:35 to 11:37 was the time period that discussion had to take place in because the dog was called at 11:37? So the time period for that conversation was 2 minutes.
Melton. When the call came in versus the actual...
The stop occurred at
11:35.
Right? So, and the dog was called at 11:37.
I believe that's correct. But but that's more than a one question, are those prison tattoos? That's why, yes, sure. But it's unnecessary for the... So if you're going to apply Matthews and say there's a good faith because Ellis applied, we need to look at the factual distinctions between the two. And what does de minimis mean? It isn't a certain period of time, definitively. We know that. It's a case-by-case...
It's an amazing case that he's not binding on his court, but he's persuasive and gives us a time frame as to what de minimis considerations could be.
Right. But that was the... We're talking about 2 minutes in that stop.
We're talking about 2 minutes based on what Judge Stein's question is.
But keep in mind, and I have to keep saying this, there are three times there's a deviation from the traffic stop. That's just one of them.
Right. You're talking about the conversation with Melton, the calling of the drug dog. Okay,
yes.
There's two of the deviations that you're discussing.
Yes. And the conversation with the canine unit when it arrives. And Milton's testimony is, although he was still in the squad car apparently, he did specifically say that he was just about finished with what he was doing when he stopped to have a conversation with Robinson about where to search and how to conduct the search and where to do the search. So again, that's
I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Ms. Fitzgerald. Is there anything in the way of a finding of fact by the trial court on this point of what happened and what we're bound by in terms of the trial court? Because it seems to me that when he's in the patrol car processing, several things can be going on at the same time.
Potentially, but the trial court, yes, and I quoted it on page 13 and on page 14 of my brief.
That's what I'm trying to get you to talk about.
Okay, if you're asking about the actual trial court's finding, it said, assume that according to Milton, Officer Rob, just before he was finished, and that prior to taking the canine out of the car, he approached the defendant's car and had a conversation. Prior to taking out the canine and approaching the car, Robinson had a conversation with the officer and may have had a conversation with more than one officer. And that, the judge was assuming worst case scenario. So we have what the judge said, and that is a factual finding. I see that I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll come down and brief counsel, and then we'll call the next case.